Be sure to tune in to Tamina Talks Immigration with Tamina Watson this and every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Immigration attorney Tamina Watson founded Watson Immigration Law here in Seattle and is a frequent speaker, author, and blogger who has appeared in Forbes, CNN, The Seattle Times, and much more. On her radio show, Tamina will take all your questions live on air. Plus, she will discuss and provide insight into the latest immigration news and issues, as well as talk with notable personalities who have impacted U.S. immigration law or are notable immigrants themselves. Check out Tamina Talks Immigration Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on Desi 1250 AM, radio that listens to you.
Good afternoon. This is Tamina Watson on Desi 1250 AM. Thank you so much for joining us today. As you know, this is an unusual time for me. I am not normally on drive time. So if you are driving home, hello to you and thank you so much for tuning in. We are having a very special show today, and I will tell you all about that in a few minutes. But, you know, here we are. It's a bright and beautiful sunny afternoon, and we're going to be speaking about immigration for the next hour. I was going to say half an hour, but hour. So, you know, how's your day? Do you have a weekend plan coming up? What are the fun things that will happen to you? I would love to hear about them. So call into the studio at 844-301-1250. Please note that we are on Facebook Live. We are actually on air as well. So if you're in your car, tune in at 1250 a.m. If you know somebody driving and they are obviously not allowed to play with their phone anymore, but at least if there's a way to get a message, let them know that I'm on the radio at 1250 a.m. If you have family and friends, make sure that they know that you can stream live at www.desi1250am.com. And if you have the app, make sure you download that so you have better sound quality. But we are actually on live Facebook as well. And because of this special show, I thought it was prudent to make sure that you could all see me. I have a lot to share. We have a wonderful guest. And to be honest, this guest, I am so honored and grateful that she is actually on this particular show of all others to talk about some of the very important things that are so topical at the moment and bringing some challenges into the immigration world. If you do have questions and comments, you can actually call us at 844-301-1250. And the email address here is info@watsonimmigrationlaw.com. And of course, this email at the studio is contact@desi1250am.com. A reminder that there is a Facebook page. Make sure that you like it. Spread the word. We have about 10,000 likes already. We would love to get some more. And this show will continue maybe on Facebook for a while before other things happen. And I really can't wait to tell you. But we have a wonderful guest. And before we talk about news updates and all the things that are going on locally, I don't want to keep our wonderful guest waiting anymore. Today's guest is none other than Felicia Escobar Carrillo. She is a seasoned policymaker and coalition builder and experience working in the government and nonprofit sectors. Most recently, she served as special assistant to the president for immigration policy, and that's President Obama. In this role, Felicia developed President Obama's immigration policy agenda. This work involved developing the president's immigration reform principles, drafting legislative proposals, and providing technical assistance to congressional offices. She also played a key role in the development and implementation of immigration executive actions pursued by the Obama administration, including the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, otherwise known as DACA, and the president's 2014 immigration executive actions. She also led the White House Task Force on New Americans, including its Building Welcoming Communities campaign to encourage local communities to engage in welcoming and integration efforts. Prior to this, Felicia worked in the U.S. Senate for U.S. Senator Ken Salazar during the comprehensive immigration reform debates of 2006 and 7, and for the Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle. She started her career at the National Council of La Raza, advocating for Latinos in the Texas State Legislature. Recently, Felicia served as the principal consultant for the LA Justice Fund, a public-private partnership that seeks to increase access to legal services for immigrants in removal proceedings. She's also a member of the American Bar Association's Commission on Immigration. Felicia received a Bachelor of Arts from Yale University, a Master's in Public Policy from Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and her Juris Doctorate from UCLA School of Law. Felicia, are you there? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Felicia. Yes, here. So wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to join you. I know you've been, this has been a show you have been running for quite some time, and I'm glad I'm able to finally join.
Well, thank you so much. And I haven't told the listeners why it's so special, but for you being here, it's one of the most special shows I could have. And just reading your bio and all the things you have done, I am just grateful that you are somebody who can tell us what we do from here. I'm going to just start from the beginning of you were one of the most important people in the Obama White House era, developing a lot of the important policies that are being challenged today. And I want to start with DACA. A lot of people argue that DACA is not legal. Why is it legal?
Sure. Thank you for the question. And, you know, I can say that this is something that we thought about before we did DACA. Before we announced DACA quite a bit, we thought that, you know, if we were to move forward with something like DACA, you know, we'd want to make sure that it was on firm legal ground. We had lawyers from the Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security helping us evaluate the program and really felt confident, you know, moving forward. You know, I worked for a president who was formerly a constitutional law professor. So He took very seriously, the questions of the legality of what he was doing. So from our perspective, you know, DACA was fully legal. The decision to take down and terminate the program was a move that was not necessary. But in terms of kind of our evaluation of the program, you know, DACA is, an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. This is something that every law enforcement agency in the world, and definitely in our country, is a principle that they operate by. Every law enforcement agency has limited resources, and they can only enforce the laws by prioritizing, you know, who they're going to focus on and the types of laws they're going to focus on implementing and how. And so from our perspective, DACA was completely aligned with this principle of prosecutorial discretion. And, you know, it was important for us to think about the fact that we had limited resources and we wanted to prioritize our enforcement resources on people that were true public safety or national security threats, and not prioritize young people who came here as children, who, you know, have grown up, pledging allegiance to our flag and only want to contribute to the country. So, you know, from our perspective, we were firmly grounded in the Constitution and in the principle of prosecutorial discretion. We also had precedent on our side as well. Pretty much every modern president, you know, both Republican and Democrat over the last 50, 60 years has used this tool of deferred action for various groups of people. And so from our perspective, you know, that precedent also further bolstered, you know, our decision to move forward. So from our, you know, and I would say that, you know, early on the DACA program was challenged legally. There were, two, three lawsuits that were filed, one by the ICE union, some others that were filed as well, and they were thrown out of court because we, you know, we were able to effectively make the, make the arguments that this was something that we could do and that was in our realm legally.
So, it, you know, this doesn't come lightly. So anybody who thinks that this is not legal, you and the lawyers, the Department of Justice lawyers, what you're saying is this measure was taken with much advice, doing legal research, making sure that is legal in every sense of the word, and there is nothing that can be challenged, and even challenges that were posed were in fact thrown out because this is in fact legal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So somebody like yourself, I mean, there is nobody like you, actually, who has had so much involvement in creating this policy. How does it feel to see what's going on right now?
You know, it's difficult, you know, personally for me, knowing how much, you know, work and time, you know, sweat and tears that, you know, we put into developing the DACA policy and then implementing it. But, you know, I think my kind of feelings, you know, really pale in comparison when you think about the young people who have, you know, stepped forward, you know, given their information over to the federal government, submitted fingerprints, paid fees, and really, you know, tried to play by the rules that we set for them when we created the DACA program, only to see, you know, the program 5 years later, you know, be taken away from them. So, you know, certainly it's difficult, and I have my difficult days, but it's more because of, you know, I think about the young people who have benefited from DACA. You know, when we decided to move forward with DACA, you know, we really did feel like it was the right decision, and that we thought, you know, that it was legal, that it was, you know, smart policy in terms of how we use our enforcement resources. But we also knew that the young people that would take advantage of DACA would really be contributors to the country. And, you know, I would say by all measures, they have, you know, far exceeded our expectations in terms of how they have used this opportunity to, you know, to give back to the community. There are, you know, so many DACA recipients who are doctors, who are teachers, who are even lawyers, starting small businesses. You know, they're community organizers. They're very much taking advantage of the opportunity to really, you know, live up to their fullest potential. And so that's why it's so disheartening to see, you know, this administration, you know, turn a blind eye to that and decide that, you know, that they need to preemptively, you know, terminate the program.
You know, I couldn't agree more because, I mean, the people that, I mean, I serve a lot of the community and help them with their DACA applications, and I am often blown away by the type of citizenship these people have in meaning that they are community leaders and they feel for the community they're contributing. And this is, this America is their America. So thank you so much on behalf of all of these people that you had taken measures under the leadership of President Obama to create a policy like this. You know, what would happen if this policy is not kept alive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there are 800,000 young people who will, you know, will see their, you know, their ability to live up to their fullest potential eliminated. And, you know, this is going to hurt them individually. You know, many of these young folks that have, you know, obtained DACA have gone on to, you know, as I mentioned, you know, give back to their communities and, you know, use their education that some of them earned, you know, years prior but weren't able to fully use and were working, you know, low-wage jobs that didn't take advantage of their higher education and their experience, right? And so a lot of these young people are going to, you know, are going to go back into the shadows, unfortunately, and, you know, not be able to and be underemployed or unemployed, right? But I also think that they're, you know, also a very resilient group of young people, you know, they're going to fight back, right? There's already so many DACA recipients who are standing up and, you know, advocating for passage of, you know, of permanent fix in Congress, which is something that Congress has always had the power to do. And so, you know, I think there are a lot of people standing up, sharing their stories again and reminding people of the, you know, of what they've been able to accomplish as a result of having DACA. So I think that is really important. But, you know, also for our country, there are significant economic, you know, consequences for not allowing these young people to continue to have DACA. There are reports out there about kind of about the billions of dollars in lost GDP, you know, as, you know, DACA recipients move up the economic ladder. They're also contributing more taxes. They're helping to fuel the economic growth of local communities, local businesses, using their hard-earned incomes and dollars to, you know, to go to restaurants, to buy clothes, to buy houses, things like that. So there are real consequences for DACA recipients and the families that they help support in the communities, the larger communities that they give back to. And there are economic consequences as well for our country. So, you know, it's another reason, you know, those are important reasons why we really do need to, find a solution and give them, you know, some permanent relief. And I would also say that, you know, one thing that is inspiring is that DACA recipients aren't just talking about themselves. They're talking about their families as well. We wanted to implement a program, and we announced a program in 2014, you know, called the DAPA program, a program that would have been available to parents of U.S. citizens, undocumented parents of U.S. citizens and green card holders. Those people also need a solution. And I think that the DACA recipients are, you know, demanding that, you know, they get a permanent status, but we don't leave behind the larger, 11 million undocumented immigrants in our country.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up DAPA, because I know that was the deferred action for parents of children who arrived here, or children of U.S. citizen children and green card holders. I mean, I remember that was a very contentious issue, and I know you had worked very hard on that. If you've just tuned in, this is Tamina Talks Immigration on Desi 1250 AM, and we are speaking with President Obama's Special Immigration Advisor, Felicia Escobar-Carrillo, who is talking about DACA. Now, Felicia, I'm going to move on from DACA for a bit. Immigration reform is something that you have worked on for a really long time. It sounds like, you know, even the 2006 and 2007 debates you were very much involved with. Tell us why immigration reform is important in the United States.
Sure. I mean, you know, from my perspective, there are all kinds of benefits to immigration reform. You know, there are benefits of national security, right, and public safety. There are 11 million people in our country right now, and they're underground, and it would be, you know, it's important to bring them out of the shadows and make sure that we really, you know, understand who's in our country, and we give them a pathway to citizenship. There's also issues related to family unity. So, you know, immigration reform, you know, the immigration reform that we pursued in 2006 and 2007 and 2013, again, worked to clear the family immigration backlogs. We know that there are people who wait years to be reunited with their family members. These are U.S. citizens and green card holders that wait years to be reunited with their family members. And, you know, our country has always been a country that's promoted promoted families, but also promoted family unity. So that's something that would also be in an immigration reform bill. We also need to think about how our economy has changed since the last time the immigration laws were updated in a major way, which really has been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And there are all kinds of, you know, things that need to be done to bring and attract skilled immigrants who can either, you know, create jobs here by starting businesses, or contribute to our skills-based economy and perhaps create some of the next big companies down the line, right? We know there are also students that study here that we invest in, the foreign students that we invest in from abroad, and many of them, when they finish their studies, do want to stay in our country and give back. So we need to find ways to promote that as well. So those are, you know, some of the pieces of what would be in an immigration reform bill. Obviously, you know, one of the thorniest issues is figuring out how we deal with the undocumented population, and that is something that is also really critical, as I mentioned. So, you know, I think there's other big, you know, most of these bills end up being several hundred pages long, so there's other elements that need to be in it, but, you know, security, border, and interior security and enforcement are important factors, as well as, you know, fixing the legal immigration system for families and for our new economy, and also creating pathways for undocumented immigrants, whether they be dreamers, parents of U.S. citizens, or agriculture workers. This is all something that would be included in a package. And it's been, you know, a package that I think largely people have agreed on the bigger elements of this for 15 years or so. Mm-hmm. But we just haven't been able to get the politics to work for us and be able to get it over the finish line.
You know, the 2013 bill, I mean, that's the one I'm most familiar with. And I have to say, I thought it was a good compromise. Nobody was quite happy, but it was a compromise that worked. So I was very sorry and disappointed to see that it didn't quite work out. This is Tamina Watson on Desi 1250 AM. Thank you so much for joining us. We are speaking with Felicia Escobar, who was President Obama's special immigration advisor. You know, you have worked, Felicia, on several of these very key policies that have been in place since in the last 2 years that have really made a huge difference. And on Desi 1250 AM, a lot of our listeners are from the South Asian community, from India, and the H4 EAD, I have to say, you made a huge difference to them. So thank you so much for working on it. People don't know that you are the person who was really a key policymaker in that decision. So thank you so much for doing that. Tell us how that came about.
Sure. I mean, I think for a lot of the policies that we worked on in the Obama administration, it was really important for us to be listening to impacted communities. So, you know, we met with all kinds of groups. You know, my job was, you know, to meet with agency staff to, you know, make sure the government was working correctly, but also to, you know, not just trust take the word of federal employees, but to actually meet with real people who are living and experiencing the immigration system every day. And so, you know, I had the opportunity to meet with, you know, many couples, families who were, you know, waiting years and years for their H-1B workers, waiting years for their green card number to come available. And, you know, in the meantime, their spouses, you know, some of them maybe came on it on H-1B or some other work status, and then that lapsed, or, you know, just they you know, left their, you know, high-powered, high-paying jobs in another country to be reunited with their family members on an H-4. And so, that, you know, we saw these examples of people who had something to contribute to this country as well and were basically Americans in waiting. So people who are already in the process of getting a green card, but because of the way, because we haven't been able to update our immigration system, have to wait a very long time. And then their skills basically get wasted and get left on the table. And so, you know, this is, you know, hard for the country economically, but it's also really hard for families, right? And, you know, I can only imagine if I'm a, you know, someone who is, you know, worked really hard to get my education and my skills, and then I'm, you know, unable to use them, the strain that puts on me personally, mentally, and even on the whole family unit, right? So we heard these stories from families, and, you know, really thought that we needed to find a way to give them some relief while they were waiting for their green cards. And so, you know, ultimately that led to us developing a regulation and getting comments on the regulation from the public, and then finalizing it and implementing it in May of 2015, mm-hmm. Where we were able to actually, you know, let people come forward, and, you know, tens of thousands of people have benefited from this this policy, and, you know, it was very heartening. Towards the end of the administration, you know, we got to meet with some of these families and kind of see how you know, this has transformed their spouses and allowed them, by allowing their spouses to actually, you know, get full-time employment again and contribute to our country and you know, contribute to their household incomes, which, you know, also raises up their families as well. So it was definitely one of those things where we saw the immediate impact you know, really were heartened that we were able to help so many people.
Well, you did. And a lot of my clients, I know a lot of the community that I serve, and listeners actually on this particular show have actually benefited from this. So thank you so much. If you've just tuned in, this is Tamina Talks Immigration on Desi 1250 AM. We are speaking with Felicia Escobar, who was President Obama's special advisor on immigration. And she was one of the main people who helped our our listeners, their C1250 AM listeners, get H4 EAD. So if you have a friend or family who has an H4 EAD, make sure that they tune in and listen to Felicia Escobar Carrillo in person. So Felicia, what are you doing now?
Sure. So, I mean, after taking some time to catch up on my sleep, my husband and I moved to Los Angeles. It's where we both have roots here. I went to law school at UCLA, as you said at the top, and my husband is born and raised in Los Angeles. So, you know, we decided that we were going to come back west again and, you know, really kind of felt that, you know, the work that I do was going to really be driven from this at the state and local level, you know, for the next, you know, few years at least. And so, you know, and also thinking that it's important to reconnect with family and reconnect with the, you know, the immigrant communities that, you know, really brought me to this work. So, you know, we're living in LA, we're loving being back here and the beautiful weather, being close to family and friends. And, you know, professionally, I mean, there's a number of different projects I've worked on, but here locally, one of the things that I've been working on is something called the Los Angeles Justice Fund, the LA Justice Fund, which is a public-private partnership between the city and county of Los Angeles and two foundations, the California Community Foundation and the Weingart Foundation. And the fund, the LA Justice Fund, has $7.2 million that the different partners have contributed, and we're working to put those dollars in the community so that there can be more free legal representation for immigrants that are in removal proceedings or other vulnerable immigrants that are maybe not, you know, either detained or not detained, who need lawyers to help them through this very complicated process and system of the immigration courts. So we have, you know, we spent the first half of the year, you know, making sure that we could get the dollars from all the partners, and that involved educating the County Board of Supervisors and the City Council here in Los Angeles. And then for the past few months, we have been engaged in a request for proposals process where, you know, we issued an RFP out to the community with, you know, the different requirements, and, you know, asked people to submit their proposals. And we received, you know, quite a number of proposals. And we're in the midst of making final decisions about who will receive, you know, support for to implement the Justice Fund priorities. So it's an exciting effort. There are a lot of communities across the country, I think, who are also responding to this, you know, difficult time by trying to ramp up local legal services infrastructure and support. I know that the immigration bar is also doing a lot to help on the pro bono and low bono side. You know, that is all really important because, you know, there is, as I learned in the process of, you know, doing all this work at the federal level, you can create the best policy in the world, but if you don't have, you know, lawyers and advocates that can help people navigate the system once the process is, you know, once the policy is implemented, you know, it's really not really worth much, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, having legal representatives serving folks in removal proceedings to us is something that was really important. And I really, you know, the decision to move forward with this actually happened before I moved to LA. So I really have to commend the local leadership and, you know, in city and county government, you know, Mayor Garcetti, Supervisor Solis, Supervisor Hahn, but also philanthropic leaders. So the president of the California Community Foundation, Antonia Hernandez, who's done a lot of work in the immigrant rights space, and the president of the Weingart Foundation, Fred Ali, who has also been a real champion for vulnerable populations in the Los Angeles community.
Well, well done. I mean, $7.2 million is a lot of money, and it's not easy getting government approval on funds like this. So thank you so much for doing that and your leadership, and I'm sure your experience at the White House has definitely helped. You know, I don't know if you know, but Seattle and King County has similar funds as well. And in Seattle and King County, the funds have already been distributed. The RFP process has been done, and it's working. But of course, you know, there's so much more that needs to be done. So I'd love to collaborate in the future with you. You know, If you just tuned in, listeners and viewers, this is Tamina Talks Immigration on Desi 1250 AM. If you're in your car and or in your kitchen, we are speaking with Felicia Escobar, who was President Obama's special advisor on immigration reform, immigration policy, and she worked very hard to have a lot of the policies that we are working with right now that are benefiting our clients that are being challenged at the moment with the new administration. Felicia, what do we do now? I mean, your hard work has helped our clients, our communities, and their slowly being stripped away. New restrictive policies are being put in, and sometimes not through regulation, which is really troubling, actually. But what do we do as a community, as advocates, as lawyers? What should we be doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, there is so much work to do, right, in the immediate term to actually help people who are impacted by policies. And I know there's a lot of good work being done on the making sure people know their rights in the enforcement context and in so many other realms. So that work is very important. So I would just urge people to continue to do what they're doing to educate the immigrant community about the policies and the protections they have in place. I also think, as I mentioned on the LA Justice Fund, lawyers are really key right now. They're key in many respects, including, challenging some of the policies that are moving forward. Many of these policies are being moved forward in kind of questionable ways. And so I think there are definitely things that folks can do, at coming up with creative legal strategies to push back on some of these policy efforts. And I think also, it's important to just keep organizing the community. I think if there's and building the base of support for the immigrant population, for immigration reform, for the DREAM Act and things like that, this is obviously a difficult time, but if there's one silver lining, it's that people who have maybe kind of sat on the sidelines for the last 2 years are speaking up more, are getting more involved, are more engaged, and they're listening to what's happening, and they're concerned that our country's promise, our country's kind of history is being challenged, and our country is moving in a direction that they don't like. And so I think that it's important to use this moment of crisis to also hopefully galvanize more people to be supportive of immigration issues. I remember during the 2006 and 2007 immigration reform debates when we lost ultimately and weren't able to get the bill done in 2007 after trying multiple times and over two Congresses, and even with the support of a Republican White House. It was very disheartening. But I think what people ended up doing is they took that. They took that experience and they learned from it. And, as a result, the immigrant rights movement was even stronger when, President Obama came into office. And as a result, we were able to get a lot of things done. Things move in cycles. And we've had these moments, these dark moments in history before when it comes to immigration and how the country views immigrants, and we've come out of them. And so I think people need to remember that this is a hard time, but, we need to take advantage of it and organize and bring more people to the table so that when we have our moment again, which we will have our moment again sooner rather than later, hopefully we're able and prepared to activate and to get legislation finally over the finish line.
Well, Felicia, I know how hard you worked on all of these issues. And I recall meeting you for the first time when the Entrepreneur in Residence program was being created, because that is one of my key areas that I work in. And I know that you had put your heart and soul into all of the things that are benefiting my clients today. So thank you on behalf of my clients, from myself, but also from our listeners, because I know our listeners, who are primarily from the South, South Asian countries, particularly from India, I know they have benefited from the rules that you have created and all the hard work and thoughtfulness that you have put in behind them. So thank you for all that you have done. If you come to Seattle, I would love to have you on my show. And, you know, now is probably a good time to mention to all my listeners and viewers, this is actually my last show on this E1250 AM. This is because KKDZ is actually selling its company. I'm sorry, I'm crying. And it's been a wonderful 2 years in being a radio show host. And I have called it Amplified Advocacy, because it has given me a voice to actually have people like Felicia on my show to talk about all the rules that are important to our clients, our communities, and our country. So Felicia, thank you so very much for being my last guest on Desi 1250 AM KKDZ, because your work single-handedly has helped a lot of my clients and listeners today. So thank you so much for doing everything you're doing. Continue to do that. I hope that we can continue to work with you and collaborate and continue to do what you're doing. Thank you so much for being on my show today, Felicia.
Thank you for all your hard work. It's important that, you know, we have people in the field, not just in Washington, driving the message and educating the community. So, you know, thank you for the show, and I wish you much success, and I know you will continue to do great things. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Felicia. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to you, and we're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back soon. Felicia, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Be sure to tune in to Tamina Talks Immigration with Tamina Watson this and every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Immigration attorney Tamina Watson founded Watson Immigration Law here in Seattle and is a frequent speaker, author, and blogger who has appeared in Forbes, CNN, The Seattle Times, and much more. Check out Tamina Talks Immigration Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on Desi 1250 AM, radio that listens to you.
This is Tamina Watson on Desi 1250 AM. Welcome back. This is an unusual time for me to be on the show. It's a 4:37 on a Friday afternoon. I hope you're ready to start your weekend. My special announcement is that this is our very last show, Tamina Talks Immigration on KKDZ. This is because KKDZ is changing management very soon. And maybe not, I will have a show in the future. It's very hard to tell. But for now, this is my last show. If you have questions or comments, I'll take them. The number is 844-301-1250. So far, we were speaking with President Obama's special immigration advisor, Felicia Escobar, who was on our show and talking about DACA policy and other policies that she had helped shape and that are benefiting our clients and communities at the moment and that are being challenged under this administration. And her advice was keep fighting and keep fighting. So what's coming up in the next few weeks? I want to give a few notes. Number one, tomorrow, October 14th, Tasvir is having its We Belong themed film screenings, which is the immigration film screenings. And Watson Immigration Law and I myself, my firm, we are sponsoring and partnering with them on the immigration films. The films that will be shown are several, actually, and one of them is called Land of Gandhi. It's about the backlog of high-skilled immigration visas in this country. I have two tickets to give away. If you contact us through the Facebook page or email me, we will make sure that you have those tickets. So 844-301-1250, 844-301-1250. Make sure that you contact us for those two tickets. The Tasvir Film Festival is ongoing, actually, and for another week. So make sure you check out their website at tasvir.org to learn about all the other movies that are coming up. And the one other note is Katrina G from Culture Shakti. You remember she was on our show. There is a free show of Rajasthani Caravan on October 21st. I hope you will go to that. It will be at Key Arena. And the other note that you must remember is from earlier this week, when we had Dr. Claudia on our show talking about the free medical clinic That will be held on October 26th, as well as up to 29th. And there will be free dental, vision, and medical services. And we know that the immigrant community, the minority vulnerable communities will benefit from this. So if you know people who need medical attention, dental, and vision help, make sure that they know about this. This will also be at the Fisher Pavilion at the Seattle Center, I believe. So check out the website for that. It is on our blog. It's on the Desi 1250 AM website as well. Check those out and make sure you take advantage of this 4-day event with doctors in all fields free of charge. They will also prescribe and provide free glasses for people. As far as I understand, I believe that there might be some free prescriptions involved, and there will be doctors there for all sorts of tests. It's primarily from dental. Yes, there'll be dental. My producer, Dustin, who is absolutely amazing. I'm going to miss him. He keeps me straight and narrow when I'm on the show here. So this is a very, very noble thing that the city is putting on for the community here. I hope you will take advantage of them. You know, while I will not be on this C1250 AM, at least for the time being, you know, you can always contact me at watsonimmigrationlaw.com. That's www.watsonimmigrationlaw.com. You can email us at info@watsonimmigrationlaw.com. And the phone number at the office is 206-292-5237. I would also encourage you to make sure that you continuously log into the Facebook page of Tamina Talks Immigration, because that is where I will continue to be interactive with all of you. And we have 10,000 plus viewers and listeners, and it is incumbent on me to make sure that you continue to know what's going on in the immigration world. So I will be around even if I'm not on air, at least for the immediate future. So, immigration news. You know, the travel ban continues. The Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, who I had the pleasure of seeing today at lunch, and I have to tell you what happened at lunch today. He is, the Attorney General's office is continuing to look for people who are affected by the travel ban. If you or somebody you know, whether it's your family member or your employee, make sure that you contact the Attorney General's office to tell them how your life is affected by the travel ban, to make sure that you can be included in the case that is being litigated. Your voice is important. This is how you will actually get your voice heard. So make sure that it is heard. Employment-based interviews. Again, I have mentioned this in the last couple of weeks. They have begun in earnest. It is very important for you to know that if you have an employment-based green card pending and you have been stuck in the backlog forever, unfortunately, you may have to be stuck for a little bit longer. But when you finally do have your interview, your green card time come up, your priority date be current, you will face an interview. And while the USCIS has said that this will be primarily to check, you know, they're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, we know from this administration's stance that this is part of the extreme vetting. So it's very important you contact a lawyer if you don't have one. And our office email is info@watsonimmigrationlaw.com, and the website is watsonimmigrationlaw.com. You know, I want to take a few moments to say thank you to Desi 1250 AM. Desi 1250 AM had actually come to me, the KKDZ studio management had come to me in April of 2015 when they were thinking about buying out Disney, which used to be KKDZ's actual radio station at the time. And I know, and I knew immediately at the time, that Seattle, King County and Washington State is ready for an Indian station. We have been ready for a long time. We just did not have an Indian station, a Bollywood theme station, a station that would cater to the South Asian community. That is the fastest growing community in our state. So Desi 1250 has done an enormous service for us here, bringing our community together even stronger than it had been before. And, you know, it is a huge benefit to us. And I'm sorry that the station is actually changing management, but maybe Desi 1250 will continue and maybe perhaps grow stronger. But, you know, it is really important for us listeners, who I'm a listener as well, to say thank you. to all the management of KKDZ Universal Media for being here and bringing something to Washington State, to King County, that didn't exist before. So I want to take this moment to have a public thank you to the station and the management for bringing the station to us, but also for bringing me on. It's been a pleasure, and I was never going to be a radio show host before, but here I am. And 2 years later, I have grown into becoming a great radio show host. At least I think so, and that's what people say. And it's been an honor to have listeners come up to me and say to me, hey, I've listened to you before. So it has really helped me be able to advocate for the issues that are important to me. But I could not have done this without the various guests that have been on my show. So if you are interested, if you want to go back and listen to the various people who have been on this show, all the shows are archived and they are up to date on soundcloud.com. And I want to make sure that you have that website. It is soundcloud.com/Tamina Watson. All of our shows are actually there from the very beginning. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of my guests from the very first show, one of my dear, dear friends and my mentor, Joel Padgett, a fellow immigration attorney, was my very first guest on the show, and he helped me break the ice. So thank you, Joel. You may not be listening now, but I'll be making sure that you hear about this show later on. I want to say thank you to Pramila Jayapal, Congresswoman, who is in right now making noise and fighting and resisting for us, one of the most vocal voices we have at the moment in Congress. At the time, she was a state senator and she agreed to be on my show. Thank you, Pramila Jayapal, for being on my show. I really appreciate it. I want to say thank you to a lot of the people who are running for election right now. Please make note that you, as particularly a Desi 1250 listener, but if you are somebody outside Washington State and you are listening right now and you have friends and family in Washington State, make sure they know about Vandana Slatter. She is running for the 48th district Washington State. We want to make sure that Mona Das, who is running for District 8 for the congressional seat, you know about her, and please vote for her. Manka Dingra, one of our most important elections at the moment, Washington State Senate position, she's running for it. Make sure that you vote for these people. All of these people have been on my show. I would like to take a moment to thank each and every one of them. Of all the other people who have been on my show recently, it was Todd Schulte, who is the president of Forward.us, who is leaving a mark on all the things that he's doing, challenging immigration issues with this administration. Thank you, Todd Schulte, for being on the show. Ali Noorani was on our show recently, who wrote a book about There Goes the Neighborhood. That book is making a huge difference to the dialogue of immigration reform. Thank you so much. You know, Brady Walkinshaw, who was running against Pramila Jayapal before the election, he was on our show and he was just amazing. Thank you so much for being on my show. So many people. I want to take a moment to say thank you to the Deputy Mayor of Seattle, Deputy Mayor Kim, who in fact won an award today from Senator Cantwell, who actually has been on Desi 1250 AM, and you have heard her voice many, many times. Senator Cantwell had a luncheon today awarding women who have made a huge difference to our communities, and Deputy Mayor Kim was awarded today. She is actually serving her very last day at the mayor's office today, in fact. So thank you, Deputy Mayor Kim, for being on our show. Many other people, I want to say thank you to the host of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. She has a podcast, Taz Ahmed. She took a moment to be on our show. I want to say thank you to Doug Rand, who actually worked side-by-side to Felicia Escobar at the President Obama's White House, who developed the rules for entrepreneurs that are now being litigated. I want to take a moment to say thank you to a lot of the people who have been supporting the entrepreneur parole, an issue that I had worked on so hard. For some of them are Craig Montori, my dear friend, Manan Mehta, who is the CEO of Unshackled, And of course, I want to say thank you to some of our local community leaders, Tasveer, Rita Meher, Kiran Dillon. A lot of people from our communities have been on this show and really supported the immigration dialogue that is going on in these capacities and the various perspectives that are going on. You know, it's interesting that, you know, this is my last show, but I'm not going anywhere. If you need to contact me, you contact me at Tamina Talks Immigration Radio Show Facebook page. You contact me at my website, my law firm website, watsonimmigrationlaw.com. And my blog on my website is very interactive. Contact me there. Desi 1250 AM has made its mark here. And whether Desi 1250 continues in the way it has or not, we have created a dialogue and we have created a movement ourselves. And, you know, through this movement, we will continue to talk about immigration, about healthcare reform, gun control, and so much that is important to all of us. And if you want to talk with me, talk about various things that are happening to you, that is how you contact me, www.watsonimmigrationlaw.com. If you've just tuned in, this is Tamina Talks Immigration at a very different time, 4 p.m. I'm going to be signing off at 5 p.m. If you're driving, stay safe, drive safely. I'm thankful that you tuned in to listen to me. I hope you will continue to find our shows and archived ones that are on SoundCloud. You know, our community is really strong. It's never been stronger. And we can change the dialogue. There are many organizations that have been created in the last 2 years, and particularly after the election. And find one of those. Become active. Make sure that your voice is heard. Find me so I can help you. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I can definitely share what I've learned over these few years. If you have questions and comments, you can always contact me at my law firm. I love talking about immigration. You know that already. But I want to say a thank you to my husband. My husband, Tom Watson, he's not watching likely, and he probably won't be listening to this right now because he's probably got our children. But, you know, he really is my backbone and he supports me in everything I do. When the first invitation came to do a radio show and I was hesitant, even scared about being a radio show host, he was the one who said I could do it. He was the one who encouraged me and supported me and gave me the freedom and the vision that I had for this show. So a huge thank you to Tom, my husband. I also want to say thank you to everybody at my law firm. Nicole Lockett, my senior paralegal and office manager, who we shared a very funny moment, actually, and I'll share that here right now. I came back from talking with the management of This Is 1250 AM saying, oh, okay, maybe I could have a show. And I went back to my office and I said, hey, I'm going to have a radio show. And Nicole, my paralegal, said to me, oh, you do? What time is it? And I said, I don't know. What are you going to be talking about? I don't know. What day is it going to be? I don't know, but I was so excited to have a radio show. And I have to say, this morning, when my Facebook feed came up, my Facebook memory photo was Desi 1250 AM saying, I'm nervous because I'm going on live right now. That was to the day, 2 years ago, that I had my first day. So this is a very special day because 2 years ago on this day, I had my very first show. And somehow today is my last show on KKDZ. So thank you so much to everybody at KKDZ, to all my listeners, all my viewers, all the people that have been on the show. A special thank to the Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, who was on my show. He actually tried to be on my show today as well. And his office had scrambled to try to make it work and it didn't work. But I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all that he has been doing and for trying to be on the show today to speak to all of you listeners and viewers. Dustin, my producer, thank you so much for always being here and really holding my hand. And oh my gosh, he's
sure,
here.
Sure. So I'm never on this side of the camera microphone. I don't know if this is going to work, but I wanted to present to you. This is from my wife. Oh. She made chocolate chip cookies.
Thank you so
and
much.
And the note says to Tamina from Denise.
Oh, my goodness.
Hoping
my
there's
goodness.
Not too many tears.
Oh, so my goodness.
It's
oh,
been such a blessing
you,
working
you,
with
thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you Thank you so much. Yes.
Really appreciate it. I want to say thank you to Greg, who is in San Jose. He was my first producer who talked me through this. I want to say thank you to Liz, who was helped me through this initially. And Brad Benke, who is the CFO of the company. He cannot be here. He hasn't been here for a while, but he's been communicating with me. Thank you to everybody. Thank you, Desi 1250, for giving me this platform. I hope all the listeners and viewers will stay with me. Bye-bye.